Some governors have deemed liquor stores and abortion clinics as essential, but have left out churches and other houses of worship. It's not right. So I'm correcting this injustice and calling houses of worship essential.
President Donald Trump at the White House on his latest order to prod states towards further reopening their economies and societies. As the coronavirus pandemic numbers continue to grow in the U.S., now over 1.5 million cases and topping 95,000 deaths. This is Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, May 22, 2020. With the start of the Memorial Day holiday weekend, more states are gradually loosening their restrictions meant to curb the spread of the virus. We'll get updates from the governors of New Jersey, Florida, and North Carolina. Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden walking back comments in which he suggested African Americans who support President Trump, quote, ain't black, and now says, I should not have been such a wise guy, I shouldn't have been so cavalier. And the Naval Academy holds its first ever virtual graduation and commissioning ceremony. Defense Secretary Mark Esper giving the keynote address by video. We'll have a portion. We begin at the White House in the briefing room. President Trump making an announcement Friday afternoon about an executive order dealing with houses of worship.
At my direction, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is issuing guidance for communities of faith. I want to thank Dr. Redfield and the CDC for their work on this matter and all the other work they've been doing over the past what now seems like a long period of time. Today, I'm identifying houses of worship, churches, synagogue, and mosques as essential places that provide essential services. Some governors have deemed liquor stores and abortion clinics as essential, but have left out churches and other houses of worship. It's not right. So I'm correcting this injustice and calling houses of worship essential. I call upon governors to allow our churches and places of worship to open right now. If there's any question, they're going to have to call me, but they're not going to be successful in that call. These are places that hold our society together and keep our people united. The people are demanding to go to church and synagogue, go to their mosque. Many millions of Americans embrace worship as an essential part of life. The ministers, pastors, rabbis, imams, and other faith leaders will make sure that their congregations are safe as they gather and pray. I know them well. They love their congregations. They love their people. They don't want anything bad to happen to them or to anybody else. The governors need to do the right thing and allow these very important essential places of faith to open right now for this weekend. If they don't do it, I will override the governors. In America, we need more prayer, not less. Thank you very much. Thank you.
President Donald Trump in the White House briefing room. He left without taking questions. After his statement, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention did release the new guidelines for communities of faith. It includes taking steps to limit the size of gatherings, considering holding services outdoors or in large ventilated areas, and it emphasized the guidance is non-binding and for consideration only. Staying behind after the president left the briefing room was the White House Coronavirus Task Force Coordinator, Dr. Deborah Birx.
What guidelines and encouragement do you have for pastors, rabbis, imams, as they prepare to reopen? Is that appropriate nationwide right now? And what precautions do they need to follow if they're going to reopen their houses of worship?
So I've checked all 50 states have on their website what their new cases were over the last 24 or 48 hours. We're trying to get every state to do that by community, by zip code. So because I really firmly believe a knowledgeable community can really make judgments for themselves. I think each one of the the leaders in the faith community should be in touch with their local health departments so that they can communicate to their congregants. Certainly people that have significant comorbidities, we want them protected. I know those houses of worship want to protect them. And so really ensuring that maybe they can't go this week if there's high number of COVID cases. Maybe they wait another week. But there is a way to social distance like you are here in places of worship. And I think what we're trying to say with the CDC guidance is there's a way for us to work together to have social distancing and safety for people so that we decrease the amount of exposure that anyone would have to an asymptomatic. And I say it that way because I know all of you and all of Americans, if they didn't feel well, they wouldn't go to church that day.
Dr. Deborah Birx, White House Coronavirus Task Force Coordinator. She was followed in the briefing room by the White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany, and reporters asked her about the threat that the president made to override the governors and whether the president was encouraging houses of worship to defy state and local orders.
Does the White House now support these churches that are defying governor's orders and opening up?
The president's been very clear. He wants churches to reopen. He wants them to do it safely. He wants them to do it in accordance with our guidance. It's laid out very detailed. It's posted now, so you can all take a look through it. And he wants to see all of those churches open in a safe fashion.
If the governor does not allow that, does the White House support churches defying these executive orders?
The president's been very clear. He wants to see churches reopen in accordance with his guidelines.
So the answer is yes?
I just gave you an answer. The president would like churches to reopen and do it in accordance with the guidelines.
What specific provision of federal law allows the president to override a governor's
decision? The president will strongly encourage every governor to allow their churches to reopen. And boy, it's interesting to be in a room that desperately wants to seem to see these churches and houses of worship stay closed.
The president said that he has that.
Kayleigh, I object to that. I mean, I go to church. I'm dying to go back to church. The question that we're asking you and would like to have asked the president and Dr. Birx is it safe? And if it's not safe, is the president trying to encourage that? Or does the president agree with Dr. Birx that people should wait?
Jeff, it is safe to reopen your churches if you do so in accordance with the guidelines, which are laid out very stringent detail here about promoting hygiene practices, and there are 5 bullet points and cloth face coverings. If social distancing is not possible, it's recommended intensifying cleanings, promoting social distance. We lay them out meticulously. So I am thankful that we have a president that celebrates the First Amendment. The same amendment that gives you all the ability to ask me questions is there to have the freedom of worship so imams and pastors can go to their churches, can go to their places of worship, and can celebrate what is a First Amendment right in this country, which is to pray to your God and to practice your faith.
White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany. Houses of worship have been among the large gatherings linked to some clusters of coronavirus, including some in Northern California, one in Texas, and a report issued by the CDC this week said 38 people who attended an Arkansas church service in early March became sick, and 3 died. And social distancing requirements were not yet in place at that church. For a different perspective on today's announcement, Politico's Gabby Orr, the White House correspondent, has a report that has a headline, "Behind Trump's Demand to Reopen Churches, Slipping Poll Numbers and Alarm Inside His Campaign." Trump was counting on widening support from white religious voters this fall. The pandemic is sending his numbers the other way. That from Politico's Gabby Orr. You can read it at politico.com. Shortly after the president's announcement, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam held a briefing in Richmond and was asked about this order.
I'll draw far to with this, but just from the Trump administration, the CDC at the Trump administration's request has apparently declared all churches nationwide essential and that they should open immediately. What would be your response to that?
Well, Henry, the question is about our places of worship across the Commonwealth. And the first thing that I would say is in a time like this, when so many people are struggling and and making sacrifices, faith is more important than ever. And we want to make sure that individuals are allowed to practice their religion and that they're allowed to do it safely. So as we went into phase one, we changed the guidelines regarding our places of worship, and that now they are on the same level as retail stores, that they can have 50% capacity. They need to continue to practice social distancing, hygiene, those types of things. So we made that announcement as part of phase one. I have talked to a lot of faith leaders, including my minister on the Eastern Shore, and a lot of churches are continuing to do the outside, the drive-up services. And so just because we've allowed places of worship to open up with those new guidelines, it doesn't mean that they have to. So if they're more comfortable continuing the practices that they've been using over the past few weeks, they can do that. But we've made sure that people can continue to practice their faith as we work through this pandemic.
Virginia Governor Ralph Northam in Richmond. Most of his state is in a phase one reopening, with the exception of Northern Virginia counties and cities. Earlier during the White House briefing, Dr. Deborah Birx named the Washington, D.C. area, including Northern Virginia and the surrounding counties in Maryland, Montgomery and Prince George's, as having the highest coronavirus positive test rate among metro areas. That was followed by Baltimore, Chicago, and Minneapolis. Another step in reopening in New Jersey, just in time for Memorial Day. Here is Governor Phil Murphy in Trenton.
I am signing yet another executive order, lifting the limit on outdoor gatherings from 10 persons to 25 individuals. Indoor gatherings remain limited to 10 people. Additionally, this order allows for recreational campgrounds, both public and private, to reopen effective immediately. In both outdoor gatherings and campgrounds, however, social distancing must be adhered to. Organized gatherings, for example, must include clear demarcations for attendees, and we strongly recommend that everyone continue wearing face coverings. So if you were looking forward to gathering with your neighbors for Memorial Day cookout, you may do so, so long as social distancing and personal responsibility remain the order of the day. With this, the capacity for charter and fishing boats, outdoor batting cages and driving ranges, among other outdoor recreational businesses, will similarly be increased to 25. We are able to confidently make this decision today because of the hard work that each and every one of you have put in through social distancing to relieve the stresses on our healthcare system. Because you have taken to heart all that we have asked you to do and the faith you have put in us to make the right decisions to safeguard public health, we could take this step together.
New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy. Some progress in neighboring New York. Governor Andrew Cuomo telling reporters the new daily coronavirus hospitalizations in the state are at their lowest level since the outbreak began. And the number of daily deaths also trending downward, but he says they are, quote, stubborn on the way down. New York saw 109 deaths on Thursday. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis says since his state entered a phase one reopening, the number of people in the ICU declining by a quarter and the number of people on ventilators going down by a third. Today, he lifted all restrictions on organized youth activities.
I'm pleased today to announce that effective immediately, Florida will be lifting all restrictions on youth activities, including summer camp and athletics. We believe that that makes sense based on the data and observed experience. We are not going to be instituting a lot of rules or really any rules. The Department of Health will put some questions that people have questions. They'll have some Q&As put up, some other things, maybe some best practices. But at the end of the day, you know, we trust parents to be able to make decisions in conjunction with physicians and community leaders and coaches to be able to do these activities in a way that are safe. But I think our kids have been out of organized activities for a couple months now, and I think that we need to have a pathway to get it back. When you look at how the virus has affected the state of Florida, here's some interesting statistics. We in the state of Florida have observed zero fatalities under the age of 25 throughout the entire course of the pandemic. We have also observed more total fatalities for people age 90 or above than total fatalities for those under the age of 65. Let me say that again. Florida's had more COVID fatalities over 90 years of age than all the fatalities under 65 combined. And so we obviously understand that this virus has a disproportionate impact on the elderly. And fortunately, we've not seen anyone under 25 die due with COVID.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in Tallahassee. In North Carolina, Governor Roy Cooper says his state has made enough progress confronting the pandemic to move to a phase two reopening, and that includes the ability to go out to a restaurant.
Starting at 5 p.m. today, restaurants can open for in-person dining at 50% capacity and will use enhanced cleaning and health screening. Restaurants are a major part of our economy, and this virus has been tough on them. As we enter phase two, I appreciate that restaurant owners across North Carolina are focused on how to keep their customers and their employees safe. They know that strong safety precautions will be good business. To help this effort, the Department of Health and Human Services has been working closely with the North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association, North Carolina State University Extension, and Visit NC to develop an online curriculum for owners, managers, and employees of restaurants, hotels, and other businesses. It's called Count on Me NC. Count on Me is a free online training. It's focused on advanced cleaning, disinfection, social distancing, and hygiene practices to better protect the public and employees from exposure to COVID-19. When completing the course, restaurants and businesses will have a sign in the window and a logo for their website to show their commitment to using new safety protocols. You may see your server if you go into a restaurant this weekend. They'll be wearing a Count on Me pin or a name tag.
North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper in Raleigh. A new national poll finds only about half of those who regularly went to restaurants, exercised at the gym, and traveled before the outbreak would feel comfortable doing so again in the next couple of weeks. And a little bit less, about 40%, felt comfortable going to concerts, movies, theaters, or sporting events. Survey done by the Associated Press and NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. The April unemployment rate was nearly 15%. Figures for May will be released in a couple of weeks. White House Senior Advisor Kevin Hassett today giving a prediction during an interview on CNN.
There's this weird thing that basically they ask you, were you employed last week? And then if you say no, then they go through a long list of reasons. And they were supposed to take people that were on this PPP program and the small business loans that keeps people attached. They were supposed to sort of call them furloughed. But instead what they did is they called them unemployed for other reasons. There's millions and millions of those. And so if they correct that technical glitch, then April's number would have been closer to maybe 18 or 19%, and you'd be going up from there. And so the question, open question in our mind is, are they going to fix that surveying error or not? And so we're looking for a number between, say, 19 if they don't fix it, to maybe 22 or 23 if they do. And as you said, you actually, in your question, talked about the technical difficulties of measuring unemployment when things get that high and that crazy.
All right, yeah. So upwards of 22% possibly for the May numbers. Mm-hmm. Will that be the worst of it, Kevin, or will we see even higher U.S. unemployment later this summer because we are in great depression territory?
Right. I think that June will be a little bit higher. We can already tell because of like when the survey happened and what's happening with claims. And so I would expect that the turning point will be June. That's what I'm looking for. But we'll be able to, we'll see a very bad number for May. And then I think that in June, it'll start to head in the right direction. Given the number of businesses open, we have real time data on hours for small businesses and stuff. And all that stuff is heading in the right direction now.
Kevin Hassett, senior advisor to President Donald Trump. On Wall Street today, the Dow was down 9, NASDAQ up 38, S&P up 6. Next to campaign 2020, presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden telling an African-American radio talk show host Charlemagne the God he ain't black if he is still thinking about whether to support Biden or President Trump. Here's the exchange Friday morning.
Well, I saw today that a news report broke that Amy Klobuchar was being vetted, and a lot of people on social media, they're not too happy about that. And it's because they want your running mate to be a black woman. I don't know if you saw the op-ed in the Washington Post by some of the leading black women voices in this country. And they feel since black women are such a loyal voting bloc, and black people saved your political life in the primaries this year, they have things they want from you. And one of them is a black woman running mate. What do you say to them?
What I say to them is that I'm not acknowledging anybody who is being considered, but I guarantee you there are multiple black women being considered. Multiple.
Well, you know, thanks so much. That's really our time. I apologize.
You can't do that to black media.
I can't do that to white media and black media because my wife has to go on at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
Oh, I'm in trouble.
Listen, you got to come see us when you come to New York, VP Biden.
I will.
It's a long way until November. We got more questions.
You got more questions. But I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, and you ain't black.
It don't have nothing to do with Trump. It has to do with the fact I want something for my community. I would love to see
you. Take a look at my record, man. I extended the voting rights 25 years. I have a record that is second to none. The NAACP has endorsed me every time I've run. Come on. Take a look at the record.
All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Anyway, thanks. I will come back.
All right.
I look forward to seeing you in person.
Okay, absolutely.
Joe Biden on the radio show The Breakfast Club Friday morning. Later, Senator Tim Scott, the only African-American Republican in the Senate, had this reaction on Fox Business.
That is the most arrogant, condescending comment I've heard in a very long time, and that's saying something. The man who sponsored and led the charge on the 1990s crime bill that locked up more African-American males than any other piece of legislation, and President Trump comes along and through his criminal justice reform corrects the absolute mistakes made by Joe Biden. For him to make such an arrogant, ridiculous comment to, if you think about the numbers, 1.3 million African-Americans voted for Trump. He's saying to 1.3 million African-Americans that you're not black? Who in the heck does he think he is? That is the most arrogant, outrageous comment I've heard in a very long time. And I take offense to that.
Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina on Fox Business, that video retweeted by President Trump. Joe Biden later in a conference call with the U.S. Black Chamber of Commerce reportedly said, "I don't take it for granted at all, and no one should have to vote for any party based on their race, religion, or background. There are African Americans who think Trump is worth voting for. I don't think so, and I'm prepared to put my record against his." That was the bottom line, and it was really unfortunate. I shouldn't have been so cavalier. Defense Secretary Mark Esper giving a recorded keynote address today to the Naval Academy's class of 2020. This is the first pre-recorded graduation for the Academy, as coronavirus precautions have shut things down since March.
I know that making it through a service academy is challenging enough, but your experience is made even more difficult by the outbreak of a global pandemic during your final year. Yet, in spite of this crisis, you stayed true to your class motto, "We will find one." In the past few months, you've done just that, transitioning to a new normal. You've adjusted to online instruction, shouldered more of the responsibilities for your personal development, and connected with others in new ways. Through it all, you've remained agile, flexible, and committed. These are traits that I expect from all of our military leaders, especially in difficult times like these. While the coronavirus is a daunting and, in some ways, an unprecedented challenge, it is just one of the many trials you will experience throughout a lifetime of military service. As new threats continue to emerge, you must remain ready, vigilant, and prepared to protect our country, our people, and our way of life. And as our next ensigns and second lieutenants, you must never lose sight of our mission to deter conflict, preserve peace, and if necessary, to fight and to win.
Defense Secretary Mark Esper giving a pre-recorded commencement address to the U.S. Naval Academy. Groups of seniors returned last week for the first time since they left for spring break to move out of the dorms and take part in private ceremonies. The Air Force held a graduation ceremony in April. Vice President Mike Pence speaking there, but no crowds at the stadium, and cadets were 6 feet apart. And President Trump plans to speak at the Military Academy at West Point during the graduation ceremony June 13th. The president this morning, ahead of Memorial Day, held a ceremony at the White House to honor U.S. veterans and prisoners of war still listed as missing in action. What used to be called Rolling Thunder is now named Rolling to Remember.
Our nation pays a mortal tribute to the extraordinary courage, unflinching loyalty, and unselfish love and supreme devotion of the American heroes who made the ultimate sacrifice, and that's what you're here for. It's the ultimate sacrifice, and it is indeed. They laid down their lives to ensure the survival of American freedom. Their names are etched forever into the hearts of our people and the memory of our nation. And some of you, it's been very close, very, very close. It's very close to your heart. We'll cherish them and our Gold Star families for all time. We take good care of them. They're very special to us. Just as we'll always remember the nearly 82,000 Americans missing in action.
President Donald Trump speaking from the White House balcony. Below were about a dozen members of AMVETS and their motorcycles. And this is how the president finished the speech.
So you've been my friends. I want to thank you very much for it. Get those engines started. I want to see you guys drive around and drive as fast as you can, but don't get hurt.
At the White House today. Like other large events, the Rolling to Remember demonstration, originally scheduled for Sunday, has gone virtual due to the coronavirus pandemic. Those with motorcycles asked to ride 22 miles wherever they are on Sunday to call attention to the average of 20 to 22 daily veteran suicides. Thanks for being with us on Washington Today. We'll be back next Tuesday after the Memorial Day holiday. Download the free C-SPAN radio app to listen anywhere and get our podcasts. Podcasts also available online at cspan.org/podcasts. Have a good night and weekend, and stay safe.